Welcome to the MS News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell, and I also have secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. I am a columnist with MS News Today at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. Let me invite you to join our MS forums. We have over 1,000 active members discussing common themes and sharing their experience on living with multiple sclerosis. Please consider joining. You can find the link to the MS News Today forums in this episode's description. Welcome to the Multiple Sclerosis News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell. Joining us today is neuroimmunologist Dr. Sharon Stoll and award-winning actress Jamie Lynn Sigler. Dr. Sharon Stoll is a board-certified neuroimmunologist, most recently an assistant professor in the Department of Neurology at Yale School of Medicine. Dr. Stoll works as a medical commentator for several national news outlets and has been a panelist on a variety of shows, including The Doctors. Dr. Stoll serves on several pharmaceutical steering committees and is a published author on numerous peer-reviewed journals. She is also an internationally renowned speaker and patient advocate. Award-winning actress Jamie Lynn Sigler is best known for playing mezzo-soprano in the HBO original series, The Sopranos. 3 months into shooting the third season, Jamie Lynn received a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis, but she would not go public with her diagnosis for another 16 years. A busy working mother of two and wife to Major League Baseball player Cutter Dykstra, Jamie Lynn currently co-hosts the podcast Not Today, Pal, with former on-screen brother Robert Eiler. She is also a passionate MS advocate, partnering with Novartis's Kesimpta and sharing her experience in hopes of helping others navigate their own journey with multiple sclerosis. Welcome, Jamie Lynn. Thank you for joining us at Multiple Sclerosis News Today. It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Thank you. And Dr. Stoll, thank you for joining us today. It's wonderful to have you as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, thank you. Jamie Lynn, I'd like to start with you because I think our listeners as people with MS just can identify to hearing a public voice. Sometimes so often people identify just feeling a little bit better knowing there's someone out there that they can relate to that has this and can sometimes be an awfully scary diagnosis.
Yeah, it can feel very isolating. So I can understand the comfort, oddly, that it can feel to know that somebody else is feeling what you're feeling.
And that sounds awful, like misery loves comfort, but it's more like comfort seeking, like somebody's living and thriving with this, and I can too.
Yeah, I hope so.
You were diagnosed with MS at the age of 20, which is such a precious young age. And I look back to my 20s and 20, and that's a very precious age. You did not reveal your diagnosis for another 16 years. Mm-hmm. What held you back from revealing your diagnosis? And what surprised you after it became public?
Well, I think it was a number of things. I think initially, first and foremost, it was for my job, my career as an actress. I was fearful of being fired from the job that I had, from being labeled unhireable, for people not knowing enough about MS to sort of limit me without me even getting to explain what my limits might be. And I think beyond that, it might have been a bit of an acceptance issue for me. I think it was kind of this like double life I led, where the people that knew and the people that didn't and kind of still could pretend what it would be like if I didn't have this diagnosis, because I'm around this group of people that don't know and aren't picking up on it and don't see. So I can kind of pretend that it's not a reality. You know, I was doing the best I could. I was really young and scared and confused. Do I think it served me? No. But it was all I could do in that moment.
It's kind of a safety coping mechanism too, because I think at that young age, what was your first perception of MS at diagnosis?
And I think what surprised me most when I did finally come forward and publicly say that I was living with RMS was that how many other people from all different careers and walks of life also were keeping it a secret. I was very shocked to learn that. It was really sad, but also like this like understanding that you had with other people, and for people to, you know, just be open enough with me, whether it's even on just an Instagram DM or whatever it is, of just saying, you know, seeing you come forward about this is maybe giving me a little courage to come forward myself in my life, which I mean made everything all worth it, you know, because as much as we were saying like earlier that you can find comfort in knowing that somebody else is kind of experiencing what you're experiencing, to be able to also feel like you can encourage people to move forward in their lives despite living with this is doesn't make it worth it, but makes it better.
I completely empathize with that statement. And I like how you acknowledge that people can be in that space and it's okay to be there. We're not always going to want to accept everything right away. And sometimes we feel like never the two worlds should collide, right? So, but when they don't.
I mean, this has been a very, like, it's been a slow unfolding process for me. And I think that I always look to come forward and speak about it in moments where I feel like I have something to say and something that could be of value. And so, you know, right now with my experience of living with RMS for 22 years and then living publicly for the last 8, I think I've really been able to figure out things that have helped me like fully participate in my life and not let MS define me. And that's why I partnered with Novartis in creating this 3-step guide at reframingms.com, because, you know, the 3 steps are reflect, reframe, reach out. And that first step, reflect, is dealing with those difficult feelings and allowing yourself to sit in them and allowing yourself to feel them and process through them and know that it's okay. And it doesn't mean that it's the end or that you can't get out of them, but, you know, grief, sadness, depression, these are things that I felt and continue to feel at different moments, but these 3 steps are what kind of have gotten me through each moment. They've allowed me so that, like we talked about, one, reflect, then the second is reframe. So it's okay, I have MS, I have RMS, like I have difficulty with my gait, I have bladder issues. Like, how can I still be an actress, be a mom, be a wife, be a daughter, be a friend, still do the things that I enjoy doing while living with this? So then the 3rd step is reaching out and asking for that help. So whether it be, yesterday was Halloween, trick or treating with my kids, I take a wagon that I can lean on and push. I even sat in it at some point and had my husband and my kids push me around in it, but it's how I'm able to still participate. And at work as an actress, me being forthcoming and saying, this is what I can do, this is what I can't do, and still seeing that I'm worthy and hireable and have value to people despite the fact that I live with MS, to the point where now, I mean, my dream is to play somebody with MS. It's always been about hiding it and how do we work around it. And I'm in this place of acceptance finally that's taken some time, but through these 3 steps has allowed me to get to this place of being okay showing the world that this is me, and I still am me despite the fact that I have MS.
I love what I feel from you. I feel such energy from you when you speak about the 3 steps, because you're not only speaking about them, I can tell you're owning them and living them, and they are very much a visceral part of your being. And sometimes I feel like those three steps are something we have to metabolize over and over. Like sometimes we have to go back to reflection, and sometimes we have to go back and reframe who we are and how our MS fits into our reality as our disease changes and manifests, as we need mobility aids. As you know, when I was sitting in the airport in a wheelchair, wanting to scream, but saying, I can walk, but I couldn't, you know, having to reframe my thought. So I feel that that's very powerful, and that those three steps are implemented in, are very well implemented in anyone's life with MS.
I hope so. And like I said, I would never, as somebody that lives with MS, I understand how important the information and the words that you put out there are, because I too, as somebody living in the MS community, like I hold on tightly to when people that also live with this disease speak and what they say, and what they say has helped them and what's getting them through. So I take great responsibility in sharing this, because I really have seen the value and how it's helped me in my life.
That's wonderful. Speaking of your life as a busy mom and a career and trick-or-treating and everything that you do in this world, how do you navigate days that are unpredictable? As we know, MS is such an unpredictable disease. You wake up every day and you just don't know what it's going to bring. How do you navigate those? Are there any tools that you'd like to share?
Well, you know, there's little things here and there that I do. Meditation is really something that's made a big difference in my life and how I react to things, because we don't necessarily have the control, like you said, but the way we react is what we do have control over. Stretching, giving my body like love and attention, as opposed to sort of gritting through things, which I can do at times too. But you know, a lot of this, my neurologist told me, in one of our first meetings together, that my voice needed to be the loudest in the room. And I really appreciated that, because he made me feel like I had some control over this disease that maybe we can feel like we have no control over. And so a lot of that for me was talking about treatment and like what was going to fit and be best in my life and my lifestyle. So him and I came to the decision to be on ofatumumab or Kesimpta, because it's 1 minute a month. I do it myself. I can take it at home or on the go after the first three starter doses. And so me being able to have a voice in that conversation of what treatment plan would be best for me, that gives me confidence and energy, to be quite honest, to not feel like I'm having decisions being made for me all the time. Like I have an authority and I have a voice when it comes to my body and my life, because it's very easy. And I've been there, and I've had moments where it feels like the MS is the loudest voice in the room, you know, and where you really not feeling like you're having a choice. But a lot of the times, if you just reflect and reframe, you can find where you do.
I like that. I think it's very important too, to work with your healthcare partner on working for a plan that is best for you in a comprehensive manner, that you are the loudest voice, that your voice does matter. Because I, even being an advocate, I go in sometimes and my voice feels very small because I feel small, and I have to remember to elevate that voice. And I think it's powerful. You recently embarked on a healing journey in India, and I was so taken by what you gathered from that. Could you share with our audience the what you gained from that and what you took away?
So this was filmed for a documentary, so I have to be somewhat respectful of the revelations and stuff for when that comes out and airs. But what was really one of the things that was really beautiful and interesting when I first got there was realizing so much of always like healing, right, is about my body. And realizing that a healing journey, it's like, yes, MS is part of me, but it was an even further like validation that it does not define me, because being there, it was my whole person. It was Jamie. I was being seen as just Jamie, not Jamie with MS. And so it was 11 days of living at this ashram where it was just about me and my essence and my energy and my heart and my soul and my desires and my dreams having nothing to do with my body. And it was just a beautiful moment in time that I'm forever changed from. I think also one of the key things that I'll never forget that my Guruji told me was the one of the keys to life is curiosity and staying curious. And I do my best, especially in like heavy, hard times such as now, to try to remain as curious and open as possible and just trusting, right? Trusting the greater plan, because it takes you out of the minutiae and the day-to-day and the little things that we can sometimes focus so hard on. And it just makes you feel, it just made me feel more complete as a person, as opposed to kind of always focusing on just this one thing.
I think that's a powerful statement to allow people to focus on them, to make them the focal point and the self-care. I think I gathered from that just so much love for yourself. And even love for MS in a weird way, because it's part of who you are. And having that congruence, I think sometimes is so important.
Yeah, it feels
not
strange.
Always there.
But, I am in very many ways. I think that this was the catalyst for me for a lot of my growth and a lot of my self-discovery. And I am proud of who I am in the face of it, and proud of who I've become with what I've learned from it.
I think that's amazing. I'm grateful that you shared that with us. And watching that, I encourage anyone to watch the documentary when it does come out. When will that be out?
They're still filming. It's called Seekers. So there's still a few other seekers that they're taking out all around the world for their different healing journeys for all different reasons. So once it's all done, I look forward to when it does come out, and hopefully will help a lot of people. That's their intention.
I look forward to that. Jamie, as we close, what would you say to your newly diagnosed self? I think we gain so much perspective and growth in our journey. And as we look back on hindsight, sometimes we have valuable lessons. And I know I'm not the same person. What would you say?
Just ask for help. I wish I didn't do it alone for as long as I did. You know, I really wish that, again, I was doing the best I could in that moment. I have a lot of compassion for that girl. But I really wish that she got more help when she needed it.
I think asking for help can sometimes be the most difficult thing, yet it's important to know that people like to be asked, and receiving it is beautiful. The reciprocity is sometimes such a growth process.
Oh my gosh, I say it all the time. It's such a beautiful human exchange, and I have never been met with a moment of somebody not wanting to help and also not loving to help. It truly is. It fulfills us in ways that I can't even describe.
No, I feel that when the moment where you can actually break down in front of somebody and say you need them, it's a beautiful exchange when they meet you there, and they do.
I've had moments with friends where I've had my reflecting moments and breakdowns, and they're almost smiling, saying, thank you. We've been waiting for you to come and say this is hard sometimes and come ask us for help. We've been waiting. Tell us how. And I'm also just very fortunate to have an incredible support group around me. But that's something that I think anybody could achieve, but you can't find until you start asking for help.
I agree. And I think that ties in well to my last question, which is, what message would you like to leave our listeners, Jamie Lynn? And I appreciate you joining us.
I mean, my gift to you and anyone living with MS is reframingms.com. It's the process, like I said, that comes again and again, but is what gets me through, gets me out of things quick, and the more that you do it, the more you remember, the quicker you bounce back. I understand deeply what it's like to live with this, of course. And again, I believe deeply in the message and the outcome that's possible when you when you take the time to reflect and reframe and reach up.
Love it. Thank you, Jamie Lynn Sigler. It's been a privilege to have you. We appreciate you joining us on the Multiple Sclerosis News Today podcast.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Dr. Stoll, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Jen, thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate you joining us and I appreciate your time. I know how busy you are, and I have been reading a great deal about you.
You really did a deep dive.
Well, I like to know who I'm speaking with, and especially someone with your background who's done so much research combined with the patient touch. I think that's a fantastic opportunity for a patient and a physician to gain a lot of reciprocity on learning new things, what maybe the patient needs that isn't met, like symptomatology, or what you can give the patient, like the baclofen pump. Let me just back up. I'm geeking out, sorry. what inspired you to become a neurologist, specifically catered to MS?
Sure. I first want to start by saying thank you to Novartis. Jamie Lynn and I are collaborating with them and encouraging people with relapsing MS to speak up. In that note, honestly, everything that Jamie Lynn said touches, it really hit close to home. So I'm going to share something with you and your listeners, I guess, that I've never shared publicly before. One of the reasons that I went to medical school was, of course, to help people. Neurology was one of those specialties that it was like the Wild West of medicine, where we didn't have a lot of treatments for different diseases. The brain is a fascinating organ, and there's still so much of it that we don't know. And I call myself a forever student, where I love learning, and it's a field that literally you can learn forever. Specifically MS, I have multiple sclerosis. I can't believe I just said that. It's funny, everything that Jamie Lynn said, I'm sitting here and I'm nodding my head and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I tell my patients. I recommend it. I tell patients, don't keep it in, share it with others, don't keep it a secret. And I'm a huge hypocrite because it's something I don't tell anybody and it's something that I keep a secret. So I'm putting it out there.
Thank you.
I'm very proud of you.
Yeah,
thank you.
I just want to honor you right now, really quickly. I just want to honor you. You're not a hypocrite. You're human. And I just honor that you said that. Go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah. No. It's scary. It's been 15 years, and it's something that still a lot of close friends of mine don't know I have. But one of the reasons that I went into this was because I was seeing how people were being treated at the time. So women that looked exactly like me, sounded exactly like me, same stage of life, in their 20s, at their peak. And there was a little bit of compassion, of empathy, and that was missing with the doctor-patient relationship. And it's something that I experienced at that time as a medical student when I was diagnosed. And it was something that I also continued to notice when I was a resident. And it's one of the reasons that I really went into the field, because not only do I have this disease, but I want someone, or I would want others suffering with this, when they're given the diagnosis, when they have that first set of symptoms, to be treated fairly and taken seriously. A lot of young women aren't taken seriously when they have symptoms, especially neurologic symptoms. Things are brushed off. And that was something that, unfortunately, I experienced myself. I'm sure many of your listeners experienced it themselves. And I knew that was a little bit of a change that I could bring to the field.
I just want to hold space for you right now. I'm emotional. I'm really grateful that you shared that, because you just allowed people permission and to liberate something that they're holding back. And I just want to thank you for that. Really, I hope you really can own that, because it's huge. And what you offer to your patients and the world right now is much bigger than it was 1 minute ago.
Thank you. Yeah. And you know, I really have Jamie Lynn to thank. To thank, not think.
I always say you can't recognize courage or anything in anyone unless you possess it yourself. So I'm just a reflection of that back to you. And you shared this with me when we met in New York. And again, I'm just really proud of you. I know how big of a moment that is, but I hope it continues to unfold and feel liberating for you, because it should be.
Thanks.
I agree. I can't echo it better than that. Dr. Stoll, I'd love to dive in a little bit to your career. You combine your research and treating patients, and you created something I think a lot of people wouldn't know about, but understand wanting to make it better. You created the first intrathecal baclofen pump, and it's specifically designed for people living with severe spasticity. I have severe spasticity, and it's really hard to treat. It's painful. Could you explain to our listeners what that is and how that would help their spasticity?
Sure. Spasticity is something that I often describe as a Charlie horse. People get it at bed when they're trying to fall asleep, and then all of a sudden they get like a cramp. But MS spasticity is debilitating beyond belief. I mean, for those of us, it was one of the first symptoms that I actually experienced. You want to chop your leg off when it's happening. It only lasts a few minutes, but it is really debilitating. And for those that suffer with it, it can be completely limiting. And being in this field, it was something that was missing. We're used to treating multiple sclerosis with medications, disease-modifying therapies, like Kesimpta, that Jamie Lynn mentioned before. It's so we've gotten so great at all of these novel, important and effective disease-modifying therapies, and that's what we're trained in. But the problem is that's the only thing we're trained in. Since I've started in this space over 10 years ago, we've made so much headway in better treating and better understanding and preventing relapses and lesions and symptoms with medication. So for example, and also just life-changing. So we used to go from infusions and pills. Now we have a medication like Kesimpta, which is a once a month injection, takes a minute, and it's extremely effective. I mean, we know from two head-to-head clinical trials compared to an active medication like Aubagio or teriflunomide. So that's one part of the disease. The other part is treating the symptoms. So like fatigue, and then also, of course, treating symptoms like spasticity. Intrathecal baclofen pumps have been reserved for people that are in horrific accidents that have that aren't able to use their limbs. It used to be used more for people with MS, just people in wheelchairs. And one of the things that I realized was that it's extremely effective also in people that aren't in wheelchairs, for just to control the spasticity. And also because we know that one of the main side effects of oral baclofen is it puts you to sleep. That on top of most people's fatigue with MS can be limiting. So to give somebody, to basically change their life with something that can control symptoms is so impactful for individuals. And that's one of the reasons that I really took on this initiative.
I think that is, it's an acknowledgement to living with the symptoms, the everyday symptoms of MS, not just the going to the DMT, like Kesimpta. I think the DMT, as you said, it's been kind of the gold standard, but how to manage our everyday lives is so crucial so we can maximize and thrive.
Exactly. Yeah.
Multiple sclerosis has changed drastically in the last decade, and in the interest of time, we'll keep this brief. But sure. In your purview, how do you think the next great discovery will affect those with MS?
Yeah, so I know what the next great discovery should be. The next great discovery, I think what it will be is a little different. I think it's actually, to your point, treatments for primary progressive and secondary progressive, because that's something that has been lagging behind the relapsing remitting phase. So of course, new medications are coming out every year, which is amazing. And then of course, we also want to weigh the risk and risk and reward with a lot of these medications. So Kesimpta, as I mentioned before, like many other MS medications in that class, come with risks. So common risks, injection reaction, infection, reduced antibodies, and headaches. And then, of course, I also always want to caution my patients that if they have an active infection like hepatitis B, it's contraindicated. And then, of course, I also counsel my patients about if they're pregnant or plan to beginning to get pregnant in the next year or two, definitely want to talk to their doctors. But in terms of the next great discovery, I think that's going to be a medication for remyelination. That's what I want to see next. And I'm sure many people listening will also want to see that next.
I couldn't agree more. Well, Dr. Stoll, I mean, that would be a wonderful discovery. I mean, and I think a very realistic one on the horizon from what I read.
Yeah.
As we close, Dr. Stoll, again, I appreciate your time and your revelation. I hold that really powerfully that you chose to share that here, and I'm grateful. Thank you. What message would you like to leave our listeners?
Honestly, I would just echo everything that Jamie Lynn said. It was so moving. It literally moved me to share something so private with everyone. But really, I wouldn't be a part of this campaign with Novartis if I didn't fully support it and fully believe in it. And going to that website, refrainingms.com, reading every single thing that's on there, it's something that I wish was available when I was first diagnosed. And you know what? It's something that honestly, I would need a reminder every month, as a patient and as a provider, to go back and really be that loudest voice in the room, as Jamie Lynn said, and to ask questions, to be a part of that conversation. If someone's not happy about the medications that they're on or symptom control, discuss it with their physician, because unfortunately, we don't have as much time to bring up everything, and we'll only know what's important to you if it's mentioned during the visit. So that's something I would definitely encourage everyone to do.
Thank you, Dr. Stoll. And sure. Thank you to our listeners at Multiple Sclerosis News Today. This is the Multiple Sclerosis Podcast, and I'm your host, Jen Powell. Share your thoughts on this episode through social media. You can find MS News Today on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Follow us to keep updated on the latest news and to never miss new content and initiatives. Click the links in this episode's description.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to Multiple Sclerosis News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com.